This is VOA News coming to you by remote. I'm Gene Randall. White House physician Sean Connolly and a large medical team say President Donald Trump is doing very well dealing with his COVID-19 symptoms, including a cough, that is having no problems breathing and has been fever-free for 24 hours. He is being treated with the antiviral drug remdesivir. The doctors would not speculate how long the president might be hospitalized, but say he is in good spirits. Mr. Trump, who had long downplayed the virus, has joined more than 7.3 million people in the United States to be hit by the coronavirus infection. After taking an experimental drug at the White House, the president was helicoptered to Walter Reed National Medical Center. The 74-year-old chief executive has canceled all of his reelection campaign events until further notice, this just a month before the November 3rd election. We're told the president will carry out his official duties in a specially equipped suite at Walter Reed, that his authority remains fully intact. In his first Twitter message after being admitted to the hospital, he wrote, "Going well, I think. Thank you to all. Love." First Lady Melania Trump, also suffering from COVID, remains at the White House and is said to be doing well. But there is concern being expressed about how many in the president's inner circle he might have infected before he showed any virus symptoms. Politico was the first to report that among those who have tested positive is Trump campaign manager Bill Stepien. The same is true for the head of the Republican Party, Ronna McDaniel, and at least some who attended last weekend's Rose Garden event when the president announced his choice of Judge Amy Coney Barrett for the U.S. Supreme Court. Among those testing positive, Republican Senators Mike Lee and Tom Tillis, former White House counselor Kellyanne Conway, and the president of the University of Notre Dame. Included in the stark irony in all of this, President Trump's words from last May when he told reporters he felt no COVID vulnerability whatsoever. More news online, including the president's condition, at voanews.com. There is also a convenient, easy-to-use mobile app. Via remote, this is VOA News. Chinese state media report that President Xi Jinping has sent a message to President Trump and his wife Melania, wishing them a speedy recovery from an illness Mr. Trump refers to as the China virus. Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden continues his campaign while offering President Trump his best wishes for a speedy recovery. Biden has for now stopped using a series of negative ads aimed at Mr. Trump's performance in office, though he says the president's illness should serve as a lesson about the importance of such safeguards as face coverings. He called it, quote, a bracing reminder to all of us that we have to take this virus seriously. The latest coronavirus numbers from Johns Hopkins University worldwide, nearly 34.7 million infections and 1,029,000 fatalities. Here in the U.S., deaths total close to 209,000. Brazil comes next with a loss of 145,000 lives. 8 months after the coronavirus arrived in India, the number of deaths from the disease today rose well above 100,000. Nearly 6.5 million people have been infected in India, a case count second only to the United States. Police in Australia's coronavirus hotspot, the state of Victoria, today strengthened patrolling as crowds of people in the capital, Melbourne, ignored stringent lockdown restrictions at beaches on the warmest weekend in months. Under lockdown rules, Melbourne's nearly 5 million people are only allowed to exercise or socialize outdoors for a maximum of 2 hours a day. They're also required to stay close to home and wear masks in public places. But television and social media footage showed large numbers of beachgoers without face coverings, as temperatures soared ahead of summer in the southern hemisphere. Victoria Premier Daniel Andrews called the behavior socially unacceptable. Britain's Foreign Minister Dominic Raab said today he worried for Boris Johnson's life when the Prime Minister was hospitalized with COVID-19 in April. Raab stood in for him for almost a month while he recovered. Johnson first became ill in late March and spent time in intensive care. The UK has lost more than 42,000 people to the coronavirus. In the U.S. state of California, fire crews are battling flames raging in the foothills of the Napa Valley wine region. As forecast, this weekend called for a return of dangerous high winds and hot weather. The so-called glass fire broke out last Sunday near the resort community of Calistoga, some 75 miles north of San Francisco. It's already destroyed about 250 homes and other structures. Thick smoke covers deserted Napa Valley communities that would typically be crowded with visitors for the annual grape harvest. Armenia is pledging to work with Russia, the United States, and France on renewing a ceasefire in Nagorno-Karabakh, the breakaway enclave in the South Caucasus. Azerbaijan, which is fighting ethnic Armenian forces, has not responded to the call for a stand down. More news online at voanews.com. Via remote, I'm Gene Randall, and this is VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
It's a clear sign that people are not in favor of CCM any longer. So they're trying to use any possible means to frustrate Chadema, to frustrate Mr. Lissu from winning this election. But as I said again, this will lead us into unnecessary chaos.
Leaders of the Tanzanian main opposition party Chadema meet this weekend over a one-week campaign ban of the group's presidential candidate Tundu Lissu.
Have to, of course, dissolve the current electoral commission and make sure that we have an entity that plays the role of the administration and also the electoral commission, so that we have only one entity, not multiple players in this process.
A Malian opposition leader welcomes a decision by the military junta to scrap plans that will pave way for its leader to replace the interim president.
In 2016, I took the electoral commission to the High Court for them to implement the new voters register. And so definitely it is something that we need, at least, if nothing at all, we've managed to clean over 1 million dead voters that were of the old biometric data system.
And Jacob Osei-Yeboah, an engineer and an entrepreneur, plans to compete as an independent presidential candidate in the Ghanaian upcoming December 7 general election. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The decision by the Tanzanian National Electoral Commission to ban Chadema's presidential candidate from campaigning for a week is aimed at thwarting the political momentum of the main opposition party before the general election, according to a leading member of the party. The ban comes weeks ahead of the October 28 elections. Freeman Mbowe, chairman of Chadema, says the government appears to be using state institutions to undermine the electoral prospect of Tundu Lissu, the party's presidential candidate. His remarks come after the Electoral Commission's Ethics Committee barred Tundu Lissu from campaigning for a week. This after Mr. Lissu accused the Electoral Commission of planning with the government to rig the election in favor of incumbent President John Magufuli and his ruling party, the Chama Chama Pinduzi, or CCM. The opposition party says leaders of the group will meet this weekend to develop a strategy to challenge the electoral body's decision. Freeman Mbowe tells me that any additional attempt to thwart the effort of the opposition party in the run-up to the election risk plunging the country into chaos and civil unrest.
We have received with a great shock the decision by the National Electoral Commission to ban our candidate, Mr. Tundu Lissu, from proceeding with his campaign trail for a week. Well, we find this being a madness move, really, and we are not in acceptance in any way whatsoever with this decision. And the Central Committee of the party has been called in Dar es Salaam for an emergency meeting that will determine the position of the party on the way forward. This is a clear sign of the rigging process that has just started, because they know they cannot match us on the ballot box. But I cannot say everything that we're going to do. This will be determined after the deliberations of the Central Committee of the party.
Well, Mr. Freeman Mbowe, do you think that your campaign team will appeal the decision of the Electoral Commission?
You see, Peter, so far I cannot say whether we're going to appeal or not. But the point here is, whom are you going to appeal to? Every government machinery is being instructed by the ruling party. So we don't expect justice in this whole process. But you see, these are issues that normally slide the countries into anarchy and chaos. It's unfortunately they are pushing us through that direction now. But one thing for sure is we will fight for our candidates' right to participate in the electoral process, including the campaigning. And I don't think in any way the Central Committee will come to a decision whereby we'll have to accept what the Electoral Commission is instructing him to do.
The Electoral Commission has dismissed accusations that Mr. Lissu leveled against them that they have planned with the government to rig the election for President Magufuli. And that is why the complaints by two political parties, including CCM, need to be taken seriously. What do you make of that decision?
You see, we have about 18 political parties vying for different positions in this coming election, including the presidential position. These are the parties that also lodged a claim against Tundu Lissu. They are all working on behalf of Chama Cha Mapinduzi, CCM. These are stooge political parties working in favor of CCM. And they are not campaigning anywhere. Their candidates are just, you know, they are not campaigning anywhere. They are not putting or pulling any serious effort in the campaign process. They are just being used by Chama Cha Mapinduzi. So CCM and the National Electoral Commission, they will never accept that they are doing this deliberately to frustrate the democratic process of the elections. But what I'm only saying at this point in time is anything, any move that they do, thinking that they'll be able to frustrate or kill the effort of Chadema Party and our presidential candidate, Mr. Lissu, they will slide this country into unfortunate, and I repeat, very unfortunate civil unrest.
Some supporters of the CCM are saying Tundu Lissu has so far failed to present empirical proof of his accusations that that President John Magufuli held a secret meeting with district bosses with the intention of influencing the outcome of the polls. What do you make of their assertion?
We know for sure that the returning officer in this coming general election, almost 100% of them are CCM members and supporters. We have been complaining about this for a long time, but again, and unfortunately, no, any action has been taken to correct this mess. That is point number one. Point number two, Mr. Lissu himself has never appeared before the Electoral Commission, the disciplinary committee of the commission. He has not been, he has not attended in any kind of cross-examination. So they assume he doesn't have an answer, but we have an answer. And we know for sure, majority of the returning officer who are going to preside over the electoral process, these are CCM members, and it's a well-known fact. What they are seeing today, the reaction of the electorate, the reaction of the citizens, is a clear sign that people are not in favor of CCM any longer. So they're trying to use any possible means to frustrate Chadema, to frustrate Mr. Lissu from winning this election. But as I said again, this will lead us into unnecessary chaos. But again, as a party, as a force behind the opposition move, we are kind of prepared for that.
Freeman Mbowe is the chairman of the Tanzanian main opposition party, Chadema. He spoke with me from the commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. Meanwhile, the Tanzanian National Electoral Commission is in the final process of recruiting poll officers to help administer the upcoming general election, according to Dr. Wilson Charles, Director of Elections at the Electoral Body. He also assured prospective voters that the elections will be transparent and credible despite accusations of bias. Tundu Lissu, presidential candidate for the main opposition party, Chadema, has accused the Electoral Commission of bias and double standards. His accusation was backed by leaders from the opposition ACT Wazalendo, who say that if the elections are free and fair, incumbent President John Magufuli will be defeated in the presidential poll. Officials of the Electoral Commission have dismissed the accusations as false. Dr. Wilson Charles, Director of Elections at the Tanzanian National Electoral Commission, tells me that preparations to administer the upcoming election is currently at 80%.
And the preparation is quite going on well. Most of the milestones that were supposed to be completed are almost completed. Issues of procurement of the election facilities, that's almost done. And we are just receiving them and distributing them to various constituencies. We are done with the issues of appeals. Now we are in the final stages of recruiting presiding officers, assistant presiding officers, the election clerks, as well as the security men for Polling stations that we have in Tanzania. So we know the number of polling stations already. We have recruited them, then we have to build, we have to conduct a seminar for capacity building.
When will the ballot papers be ready and distributed across the country for the elections?
Almost 80% of the election materials have already been received and are now being distributed across the country. So the issue of ballot papers, that's one source in the process. This ensure that all the materials relevant for the election in October 28 are under control.
Has the Electoral Commission been able to resolve concerns and complaints by all the political parties and stakeholders before the elections, and will you continue that engagement?
Yeah, we usually need to have various committees. We have the campaign schedule. We have the committee that is responsible for the campaign schedule that meets frequently. We have committees responsible for procurement and distribution of material meets. We have the committee for observers, and the issues of observer, international observers, we are now almost accomplishing accreditation. If needs arise, we might meet with the all political parties, responsible, relevant people from all political, those political parties participating in the general election. We might meet with them. But the issue is that we need to advocate peace, advocate issues of peace and issues of making sure that we follow the rules and the regulations as it is required.
Well, Dr. Charles, I'm sure you've heard complaints that officials of the Electoral Commission are biased in favor of one party over the opposition. Do you think their concerns are legitimate?
I don't think there is an issue of bias, but it is the issue of people complaining. This, during this period, you cannot avoid complaints, because if someone is mishandling or is misbehaving, really, you know, NEC is trying to bring them on the track, and they will think that we are becoming biased, that we are trying as much as we can to be fair. So I don't think that is very, very alarming.
What assurances is the Electoral Commission or the National Electoral Commission giving to Tanzania that the upcoming election will be free, fair, transparent, and credible? What assurances are you giving them?
Assurance is according to the rules and the regulation that the issues of polling agents will have to be implemented. The issues of fairness, making sure that all polling stations have got relevant electoral materials that are required in time. Issues of transparency, all these are things that make it prepared to adhere to. So people have to have trust that and the four procedures, and that's what you want. There is nothing that you make you want to do so to destabilize this election.
Tundu Lissu, the opposition leader, has criticized the Electoral Commission of double standards, and that you allowed other opposition parties or other political parties to support the CCM. But when ACT Wazalendo announced some sort of cooperation, although not formal, the Electoral Commission was not pleased and threatening them. How do you react?
Now, the issues of coalition, that does not fall under National Electoral Commission, but it falls under the office of the Israel political party. So that one, and the rules are quite clear. The law is about political issues of political law, so that one is not under net, but I think the registrar of political parties will be in the better position to care about that one. So if you complain about net is not the one that is responsible to allow political parties to form coalition.
Dr. Wilson Charles is the Director of Elections at the Tanzania National Electoral Commission. He spoke with me from the commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. A leading opposition member in Mali has welcomed a decision by the military junta to scrap plans that will pave the way for its leader to replace interim transitional president Ba Ndaw. Yay Samaki says Malians expect that leaders from the Economic Community of West African State, or ECOWAS, will lift sanctions imposed on the country. The decision to scrap plans that paves way for the leader of the military junta to replace the president could meet a needed requirement from the regional bloc to ease the sanctions. ECOWAS imposed sanctions on Mali following the overthrow of former President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita. The regional bloc has a zero-tolerance policy for the overthrow of a legitimately elected leader. Yusuf Magi has been going around parts of Mali meeting people in preparation for elections in the next 18 months before the polls are held. He tells me that a newly constituted electoral commission should organize credible polls.
Well, it is the right move. It's a move towards the right directions. And we congratulate and encourage the CNSP, the military leaders, to continue to put the people first and to make sure that this transition can move forward as smoothly as possible. Of course, they need to comply with the request of the ECOWAS. Since Mali is a signing member, we have subscribed to all of the principles of ECOWAS, so we must comply to this request so that Malian people will no longer suffer the downfall of the sanctions.
But how soon do you think ECOWAS will lift the sanctions, or what are the expectations of Malians for the lifting of sanctions following this development?
Well, we hope they could lift the sanctions immediately. Of course, the military people have been cooperating, but these pressures are necessary to remind and make sure that the military does not assume power. It is very important that in the 21st century that leadership, military, is under the authority of civilian political authority. So we understand the importance of these pressures, but at the same time, as we advocate for our people, we certainly hope that the sanctions will be lifted as soon as possible.
With regards to the transitional process so far, how are Malians reacting to it? Because I understand you have been crisscrossing parts of the country to meet Malians, to get their mood, to get their perspective on how things are going on the ground. How are people reacting to this transition?
Well, at first, the people of Mali welcomed the coup that it completed the actions of the people demanding for the ousted president to resign. But as we go, and this is dragging on and on, that we still don't have a government, the people are beginning to be anxious. People are beginning to wonder. So we simply want to make sure that the military leaders that understand that the role they're playing, it has an incredible impact on the livelihood of the people. So the enthusiasm is waning off a little bit. People are skeptical. But it is also important to note that there is uncertainty looming in the country. Political players are very uncertain as of where we will go next, whether at this rhythm the 18 months would be respected to hold the upcoming elections. So we certainly support the president, that the civilian president that has been appointed, and I personally invite all of the political leaders and the civil society to support the president so that he can fulfill his duties and be on time to organize the elections, fair and credible elections in 2022.
Talking about fair and credible elections, do you expect the Electoral Commission or CNE to be reconstituted with new people that political players will repose confidence in to organize the transparent and credible elections you seek?
It's not an expectation. It's a mandate. We have to reform the electoral system to make it fair and credible. We have to make sure that we have only one entity organizing and implementing election procedures in Mali. So, yes, we know, and this is part of the mandate of the transition, to make sure that the electoral process is fair and credible.
So for this to happen, we have to, of course, dissolve the current electoral commission and make sure that we have an entity that plays the role of the administration and also the electoral commission, so that we have only one entity, not multiple players in this process.
Yay Samake is a leading opposition member in Mali. He spoke with me from the capital, Bamako. Jacob Oseyeboa is an engineer and an entrepreneur. He has also declared plans to contest as an independent presidential candidate in the upcoming general election in Ghana, scheduled for December 7. Ghanaians will go to the polls in December to choose a new president, parliament, and local representatives. This year will be the third time that Mr. Yeboa is running as an independent candidate. To become the next president, he would have to defeat incumbent President Nana Akufo-Addo from the governing New Patriotic Party, or NPP, and former President John Dramani Mahama from the main opposition party, the National Democratic Congress, or NDC, as well as other candidates. Analysts say Yeboa faces a daunting task to defeat the two leading presidential candidates, because the two major parties have dominated the political landscape in Ghana since the country returned to constitutional rule in 1992. To learn more about his vision for Ghana and plans to resolve the challenges the country faces, I read Jacob Oseyeboa in the Ghanaian capital, Accra.
The first vision is for Ghana to understand her own democracy, because democracy differs from country to country. But the principle is the same. That is the two tenets of democracy. The one, respect for the fundamental human rights, and two, respect for rule of law. The second thing that we would want to achieve is the management wealth creation, the management of our natural resources and human resources for the consumption of the world. And so I just want to summarize it into these two folds. That is the vision that we have: wealth creation and then carving out our own democracy as Ghanaians and for Africa.
A lot of Ghanaians have been talking about corruption in public institutions. As a presidential candidate, what specific measures are you going to implement to fight graft in Ghana?
First and foremost, I have to be a leader by example, setting the high standard. The other thing had to do with the fact that corruption or graft is a systemic. And I have said it that I will use ICT in fighting corruption because of its systemic nature. And for that matter, you need systemic solution, not one of. And the most important thing is about the law enforcement. And that is why I'm saying that I have to use myself as an example. Corruption in the system.
This is the third time that you'll be participating in the elections. Obviously, the two times you participated, you were not successful. What makes you uniquely qualified this time around to win?
Ghanaians are not oblivious about the fact that the MPP and NDC cannot rather help. Now we could see that because of the way Jacob Oseyeboa has actually handled himself, now, it has attracted a lot of people who now would want to stand as independent presidential candidate. You can cut as many as about eight that actually launched themselves to stand as an independent presidential candidate.
This will be your third time to contest. How sure are you that you'll be able to defeat the incumbent President Nana Addo Dankwa Akufo-Addo or his main challenger, former President John Dramani Mahama, in the upcoming polls?
No, you see, we are going to serve as an eye-opener to Ghanaians. You see, mind you, Peter, this is the first time that we are having one-term president seeking second mandate. Now, what happened? Normally, when there's such an abysmal and dysfunctional governance from either the MPP and NDC, they tend to have a presidential candidate that serves as a solace for the electorate. But here we are. We know what Mahama did. We know what Akufo-Addo is doing. And so it's now obvious they cannot hide themselves. And that one alone is the trump card for Jacob Oseyeboa or the independent presidential ticket. That is the clarion call. And they know it. And so they are doing whatever that they can so that the independent presidential candidate, none of them will win because they have the moral authority to challenge them. They know it. They have totally failed the nation and the youth. And so, and especially Nanado, Ghanaians are actually in great state of disillusionment.
Are you pleased with how the Electoral Commission has comported itself so far and how it plans to organize the upcoming December general election?
Barring everything, you see, the Electoral Commission is doing an excellent job. With the new voters register, we managed to clean the system. But as with all technological projects, implementation will by all means be doubled with one or two mistakes. But so far, so good. All the things that they said that the Electoral Commission could not do, they've done it. And mind you, Peter, in 2016, I took the Electoral Commission to the High Court for them to implement the new voters register. And so definitely it was something that we need, at least, if nothing at all, we've managed to clean over 1 million dead voters that were on the old biometric data system.
Jacob Oseyebua is an engineer, an entrepreneur, and an independent presidential candidate. He spoke with me from the Ghanaian capital, Accra. And you are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, in Eswatini, the General Secretary of the People's United Democratic Movement, or PUDEMU, a banned opposition political party, says opposition groups are planning to demand political power to be transferred from the monarchy to the people. Wandile Ludlu says, although a difficult task, the groups will not be deterred in their plans to demand a situation where the destiny of the country is determined by the people. But analysts say the plan is likely to draw a fierce backlash from the government. They warned that the leaders are likely to be arrested and charged with treason, among other charges. However, Wandile Ludlu, the General Secretary of the People's United Democratic Movement, or PUDEMU, tells me that the leaders of the opposition parties are aware but unafraid of the risks.
Five political parties under what is called the Political Party Assembly, PPA, have organized themselves and have been working on a plan or campaign, a campaign that will be themed the transfer of power to the people. This is a campaign that seeks to raise the fundamental democracy deficit in the country, owing to the reality that the biggest problem in Swaziland is that the monarchy has too much power, and the government and any other structure is forced, therefore, to exist to service the monarchy. And that is the biggest crisis that faces the country.
But political parties are barred from participating in elections in Eswatini. How are you going to force the monarchy with all the resources and power that it has at its disposal to force the monarchy to hand over power and just become ceremonial?
I agree with you. Your observation is correct. And of course, we have considered that reality. But we subscribe to this belief that real power relies with the people. Real change comes from ordinary people. Our job is to go into the ground, difficult and risky as it may be, organize ordinary people, ordinary communities, ordinary poor workers into realizing that a better future for themselves and their kids lie only with them standing up and challenging in whatever way and form the current political framework.
Are you not concerned that your supporters or perhaps leaders of these groups or political parties planning this launch could be in danger of arrest?
We definitely will face that. We have lived like that for many years. People have been arrested, tortured, and all sorts of violations. But I think the biggest fear that we must have as Swazi is a bleak future without power for people to run their own affairs. So it's a question of choosing which danger to worry yourself the most with. Should we be more worried about being beaten, being tortured, being chilled, being thrown in the prisons? Or should we worry about a future where our children and ourselves will continue to live like third-class citizens in our own land of birth? Shouldn't we worry about a situation where we live in a country where the economy is literally owned, and also to the benefit of the royal few elites as well as international capital, and the rest of us are perpetually in abject poverty? The more we work harder, the poorer we get. I think we need to worry the most about that terrible future than an immediate discomfort of being arrested, being beaten, and even being killed, because Mswati does that.
But do you have a groundswell of support from the masses, from the grassroots, to effect this dramatic and drastic change that you seek in Eswatini?
Yes. We know that building that critical mass is the toughest job, is the game changer. We have been trying that for many years. Sometimes we win, sometimes we don't win. But we think and hold this view that continuously sharpening our skills and our tactics and strategy of building the ground so that there is enough groundswell that is not only starts a campaign, but sustains it. But of course, they are other than mass power, because this is in the main mass power. This campaign will also take into cognizance what we call strategic power. Strategic power speaks to the development partners. The government of the United States of America supports a lot this regime in various aspects, which makes it continue to stand. Many development partners, the European Union, and many other independent countries, as well as international UN agencies and such like organizations, we are going to lobby them. So we are a two-pronged. We're going to build mass power. We are going also to harness strategic power.
Wandede Ludlu is the General Secretary of the People's United Democratic Movement, or PUDEMO, in Eswatini. He spoke with me from the capital, Mbabane. Somali leaders have agreed to hold parliamentary and presidential elections on time. The plan is to have both new lower and upper house elected members ready by December, who will then elect the president. The election plan brings an end to the term extension debate that threatened the fragile political stability in the Horn of Africa nation. The Electoral Commission and its workers have 2 months to find delegates and set 2 polling stations in every federal state to begin the process of electing political leaders that will represent the country for 4 years. For VOA, Mohammed Yusuf reports from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
After months of negotiating ways to bring an end to the current government mandate in less than 5 months, Somali leaders have agreed to have 3 months of political activities that will lead to parliament and senators' elections. The electoral process will begin with a 21-member electoral committee appointment that will run the election at the federal state level. Somalia has 5 federal member states. Omar Mahmoud is a senior analyst on Somalia at the International Crisis Group. He says this is an ambitious plan.
The current timeline adheres to that and doesn't allow for any extensions to the mandates, which is a key complaint from the opposition and those opposed to the Front March administration. So it does stick to that, but given that we're so late in the game starting the technical preparations, it is quite ambitious to undertake all of this in just a few months.
President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo's administration and federal states hope to complete the selection of 101 delegates, including clan elders, which will start in November. The selection of clan delegates paved the way for the election of 275 lawmakers and 59 senators, who then will elect the president. Mahmoud says the plan requires a quick implementation for it to work.
These electoral committees at both the federal and state level are being started from scratch, essentially, with just, you know, months before they're tasked with their mandate. In terms of selection of the delegates as well, is a process that's going to unfold very quickly. So that's the technical side. And then on top of that, you know, we have the security side as well. We now have the list of where the votes can take place, but this is an expansion on previous years as well. So those arrangements are going to have to be made quite quickly.
In a recent statement, the United Nations Assistance Mission in Somalia and other international partners said the agreed electoral model falls short of the long-standing Somali goal of direct voting for parliament members in an election. Last month, the leaders agreed to retain the 4.5 clan power-sharing system that gives an equal representation in parliament to the country's four major clans and smaller seats to the so-called minor clans. The major change for the 2016 model is that elections for each parliament seat will involve 101 delegates, up from 51 4 years ago. Felix Odhiambo, the head of non-profit Electoral Law and Governance Institute in Africa, says few people cannot continue to elect Somali leaders.
In situations such as Somalia, they don't have to hold, they can have proportional representation that in itself allows for a better way of dealing with the complex situation in that country. But to have clan elders make a say or a vote on behalf of the citizens perpetually undermines the principle of universal suffrage and probably in the long run contributes to the kind of political stability that we have witnessed.
The current Somali government mandate ends in February. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
But baby, our matter don't be for street seats. Now come see the pressure they won't give it. I don't know why they don't fit to let us be. But what since we jam, we the only feel love, loving. Teasing each other, but we still not let go. Maybe old time people, we say gone, I must go. See our from family people. Tell me where to meet them, oh no. They get issues so they can't stand alone. If the old time people waste the night, jam a school. Got it all twisted, them them once world alone. Tell me where to need them, oh no. Can't I love Niger, baby. Niger, big love, you can't like you. See when they come together. Just like he is supposed to be. Niger, I love Ghana, baby. Can't I love the Niger, guy. Nice one to go together. The love they like supposed to be. We get, we the conqueror, my lovers, the sunset. I'll be buying you Prada bags and more. Honey, you making sweet macana and cocoa. We for shop some money from the oil and gold. Party with the party so, oh. So, so wine and she come, they go. She the wine like she take on top of moto. Posts on a boy, set it up, get some more. So baby, you mean more to me than CDs and Nairas. And if you wear the money, baby, I'll take off the bribe.
Together, together.
See how nice, yes, yes.
See how nice they look together.
See how nice they look together.
Kunichombeza, kunichombeza, kubembeleza, Aja pleje. Ngwano, look the way you dey look tonight, okoko. You come with deadly plan tonight, okoko. You want to jump and hit tonight, okoko. You ready to kill somebody tonight, okoko. Allow a time and a hold you tight, okoko. Assisting me so I don't like to fight, okoko. Run with me and I will treat you right, and I will never let you leave my side. Boy, yeah, say the pretty boy, of course. If I don't say that, I can't hear no sound, but I can't touch. If people look when I'm back, I'm sick of popcorn. In MS, I'm working on a bunu, even last spawn. Eh, the way you shaking is your bum bum. Now, the very obvious, so that I want some. I shut up, I'm a good for chata. From the first day, I'm a good for chata.
yote tisa kumi, nimeridhika mimi kitu wananipa akiniona anawika. My baby knows that I am the chosen. If I am open, nana nataka ukirudi nikupokee.
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sali, reporter Douglas Mpuga, and producer Saida Hamdoun, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, if you do not know where you are going, remember where you came from. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.